The spirit of performance defines Acura. And now, it's electric. Introducing the all-electric ZDX, Acura's most powerful SUV yet. While what powers their cars may change, the energy that makes Acura never will. Crafted using the same formula that brought them electrified supercars and multiple IMSA championships, the ZDX has track-tested performance that packs an energy all its own. With a premium Bang & Olufsen sound system and up to 313-mile range on a single charge, and a Type S variant with an estimated 500 horsepower, the ZDX is everything they said electric could never be. It was built with the driver in mind, just like Acura has been doing since the beginning. We could talk all day, but the only way to experience this electric performance is to drive it yourself. Unlock the energy and order yours at Acura.com.
Right now on Fast, Merck versus the U.S. government. The drug giant suing Uncle Sam, saying D.C.'s plan to negotiate drug pricing through Medicare is unconstitutional. The details of the suit, the ripple effects from Big Pharma straight ahead. Plus, a banking bounce, the regionals rebounding today and surging over the last week. What is behind this turnaround, and could now be the time to bet again on the banks? And later, a buzzkill for Boeing. Their Dreamliner nightmare continues. Home builders keep hammering home gains and pouring a tall, cold glass of profits in the wake of the Bud Light boycott. I'm Melissa Lee. This is Fast Money. We're live at the Nasdaq Market Site. On the desk tonight, Tim Seymour, Bono and Ison, Guy Adami, and Mike Coe. We start off with a Merck meltdown, shares dropping nearly 3% today after the company sued the Biden administration over the Inflation Reduction Act. The legislation would give Medicare the ability to negotiate prescription drug prices down by as much as 60%. Merck calling the bargaining process a sham and, quote, tantamount to extortion. Among the drugs that could be impacted, diabetes drug Januvia, which brought Merck nearly $3 billion in revenue last year, and cancer treatment Keytruda with $21 billion in annual sales. So will other pharma companies follow Merck's lead? And what will this mean for the healthcare industry? Obviously, pricing has been a big overhang over the industry, and what control the government has over this,
Scott? Yeah, will others follow in kind? I think absolutely they will. Is Merck on the moral high ground? I don't know. But on the legal high ground, probably yes. And when you call something a sham, and to your point, tantamount to extortion, I mean, they have pretty good lawyers. They chose those words carefully. The question is, how do you invest or trade the stocks? Now, I think a couple things. Eli Lilly, by the way, is within a whisper of an all-time high. Merck has sold off from its all-time high, not that much, but I think there's been somewhat of a rotation out of the space. If you think, like I think, this will pass as well, valuations are so compelling, and at some point there'll be a rotation back to healthcare from high-flying tech, I think you own these stocks on these sell-offs.
But isn't this political sort of, I don't know, is this a headwind? Tim.
It's a headwind because it's uncertainty. We talk this all the time. Yeah. This is just like it. And it feels like another one of those sectors. We've just gotten done with the banks being under at least a different kind of a regulatory squeeze. This is a squeeze where there's unknown. Granted, we have till 2026 to see some of these rules come into stake. I don't think there's any question other drug companies come in here. And I think it's at some point it'll be, I think, the entire group fighting together. But if you think about what's going on with Merck, and you think about Keytruda, and you think about some of the products that they have, that, by the way, they just gave an update on Keytruda recently at a big industry conference where they talked about a product pipeline for mid to late cycle oncology, where there's a lot of exciting things that have caused a lot of folks to come out and re-rate. I mean, they have as much to lose by this as anybody. So if you think about the places, and there's been pretty good dispersion between healthcare, right? I mean, my Pfizer, not so much, but you look at a Merck, you look at a Lilly, you have companies that have really outperformed, and you've got an analyst community, I think a portfolio management community that have been easy to adopt some of these trends. And so I think it's early stages here. This isn't new news. We knew about this Inflation Protection Act, you know, hit against the drug companies. They are hitting back. It's political, and it remains so.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know what else we really would have expected. I mean, this is really the lifeblood of the profitability of these companies. Essentially, before they convert to generics, they need to extract maximum value. So I'm not surprised to see them come out and fight vehemently. I think from a trading standpoint, and that's really why we're here, I mean, it may compel you to kind of look into, I mean, counterintuitively, more risky parts of the healthcare space, biotech, et cetera, that aren't necessarily subject to these type of regulations. So for me, I do think there will always be a demand for healthcare, particularly the defensive nature. But I can understand, at least in the short or intermediate term, pushing out a bit on the risk curve while you avoid this situation altogether.
You know, Mike, what's interesting about this whole IRA impact is that, you know when these drugs will come under the effect of the IRA. Januvia, it'll be 2026, where it will be subject to, you know, potentially a 25 to 60% discount for Keytruda. That's going to be a little bit farther out in 2028. So, you know, if you're worried about a patent cliff, all of a sudden this is like an earlier, worse almost patent cliff, because you're cutting short that lifespan of the drug where you can actually make money.
Well, that's right. You get two cliffs essentially now for the price of one. And, you know, this is unfortunately from a legal perspective, it's, there's also a little bit of a political battle going on here. Optically, this is a tough one, right? Because high drug prices are unpopular, and trying to reduce healthcare spending, particularly by the government, is probably a politically popular portion of the IRA, I would think. The thing is that when you take a look at Pfizer and Merck specifically, these are two names that are particularly cheap. A lot of bad news is already baked into them. We are seeing some other stocks like AstraZeneca today, where we saw some actually bullish options activity, but bearish in these other two, as I was mentioning. I think, you know, this might actually be an okay time to dip your toe into some of these, because there's already so much bad news baked in.
Guy, how much, I mean, when you say there could be a rotation, and how much is that influenced by your belief that this is going to be so far out, or that it's already factored into the stocks?
I think the rotation portion, I believe that some of the indications, some of the metrics on these high-flying tech names are levels we haven't seen in 30 years. I mean, we're two standard deviations away in terms of RSIs and stuff. So I think at a certain point, some of these high-value, high-growth names are going to break. I think a break in those stocks will get people back in energy, one, but healthcare as well, too. And I think it's just a matter of time at this point, given where things are. And these stocks, listen, if they've been under pressure, it's hard to say that with Eli Lilly at an all-time high and Merck within a whisper of its all-time high. But valuations to me are still compelling, so I still think these stocks go higher.
Well, rotation is the word for the markets right now, too. We could be opening the show talking about a lot of sectors that are either getting, and healthcare is a rotation out. Look, it's been a very defensive place. If you were talking to people 6 months ago, all they could tell you was to buy healthcare and maybe some energy, again, places that seem defensive and counter-cyclical. So I think a lot of the move in healthcare right now, if you look at the IYH, some of this is just a function of, look at the market we're in. Look at the move we've had. Look at the risk aggression, the risk on that's been going into mega cap tech. And I just, you know, I look at the IYH again, and again, you know, a proxy at least for the healthcare sector. And it doesn't mean that that's how you have to own it. And in fact, I'm long Merck, I'm long Pfizer, I'm long Lilly. It's traded basically in a 15% range for a year with a slightly upward, you know, kind of trajectory of a slope. And that's a function of the markets we're in. I don't think people run that far from some of the biggest balance sheets in the world, some of the most cash generative companies in the world, even with some of this overhang.
All right. Our next guest says Merck's suit against the Biden administration could cause a narrative shift in pharma. Jared Holtz is a healthcare sector specialist with Mizuho Securities. He joins us here on set at the Nasdaq. Jared, great to have you with us.
Thank you.
What are your thoughts about whether or not this thing goes through?
It's really, really tough to say. I don't really think anyone knows whether it's going to go through or not, but you know, this is Merck being very aggressive. Obviously, they pulled no punches with the language that they drew up today. And, you know, I expect other companies to follow suit here.
Specifically in the case of Merck, if you did sort of do the math and you assumed, let's say, a minimum discount, 25% discount to a Januvia and to a Keytruda, what would that mean to Merck?
I mean, it basically means that the R&D spending and maybe SG&A in terms of how they run the company, these are going to have to be cut. I mean, we saw Novartis curtail its pipeline a couple of weeks ago, basically blaming future drug price initiatives as a reason for pulling back. So I think R&D spending is going to be cut. You could see SG&A go lower too. So the whole complexion of how these companies are run broadly, I think, could change dramatically, you know, given whether it's 25% cut, 30, 60 even. So we'll see.
It sounds like then, you know, the longer term potential impact would be that the most innovative drugs will be developed in biotech, as opposed to by big pharma.
Well, that's basically what's happening now. Yeah. So no major shift there. That's why I agree with some of the panelists earlier. I think you can probably own biotech here if you're worried about the complexion in pharma, because they're going to have to be, they're desperate now. I think they could be more desperate to augment their commercial businesses, their pipelines with other assets. Where do they find them? Typically small and mid-cap biotech.
We're talking about Merck, but you had mentioned other names that are specifically under some risk here. Can you talk about that?
Yeah, well, I think AbbVie, Amgen, Pfizer. I mean, most of the companies at some point will be under a lot of risk with respect to drug pricing, whether it's 2026, 28, 29. Remember, the government is basically taking a new look every year and going to come out with 10 new drugs that they think they need to kind of mess with. So at some point, even Lilly with Mounjaro and some of these other, you know, major brands, everyone's going to be hit. It's just a matter of when. Is it 26? Is it 30? We don't know, but that's kind of the game plan.
Jared, I can understand both sides on this. And it, that question, it's a political issue. It's an emotional issue. We want these companies to spend to develop these therapies. And they're the best in the world. And we, you know, coming out of COVID, we're all thankful for the money pharma has invested in their businesses. When the government says, not only in addition to these laws and pricing and how they're going to negotiate, that you have to agree that these rules are fair. And this is where they're contesting this on a First Amendment right. Like, you're asking the drug companies to say, this is great. We think this is totally fair. We have no right to profitability. That's where this seems kind of absurd.
Yeah.
And where I think they have a lot of room to push back.
I agree. I mean, I think our understanding is that the drug companies are meeting with the government fairly regularly, and they're trying to, you know, talk to CMS about how they can improve the IRA, what they can do to actually streamline this process and make the economics more viable. And so far, based on the language in the Merck document today, it doesn't seem like that much progress is being made. But certainly, I agree that I feel like when you look at these companies and what they're going through and all the pushback on pricing and it's affecting their ability to do business, something has to be done.
So far, we've talked about drugs that are, you know, key to people's health, maintaining health. When you think about the new emerging class of weight loss drugs and when they eventually get insurance coverage, could these also be subject to this forced discount?
Yeah, I mean, it really is just a matter of when.
Where does it end?
Right, it will, so they will be hit at some point.
That are seen as a holy grail for the pharmaceutical industry. The reason why Lilly has run up so much could be basically cut in half in terms of price on the market much earlier than patent expiration.
Well, not so much earlier, but once they become large enough, the government looks at them and they fall into some criteria of being material enough from a revenue standpoint, and yes, but you know, we're in the first year of these launches, so they've got another 9, call it, before there's real intervention here. So we got time for Lilly.
Okay, Jared, great to see you. Thanks for coming by. Always nice to see you here in person, Jared Holtz. Mike Coe, your thoughts?
Yeah, I mean, when I take a look at a name like Pfizer, which is, it's kind of interesting. You know, this is valued within spitting distance, give or take, of where the company was 7 years ago. We had that huge run-up related to the pandemic and the vaccines. Obviously, a lot of that is coming back out of it now. But at a, you know, call it a $230 billion enterprise value, this is a company that's probably going to make $3.50 a share in the next 18 months or so. You know, that's not exceptionally expensive. So I think there are some places you can be in it. And of course, these companies will aggressively, I think, try to pursue product that they can extract some value out of.
I mean, on first read, it really just looks like a lot of this is being painted with very broad brush strokes. And I think that's what we're all speaking to here. You know, the other question that I have is really how this is going to impact M&A activity going forward. You have the government kind of stepping in. Are they also going to put the clamps down on companies merging or acquiring one another?
They have in other industries
already. Yeah, well,
already.
I mean, you would expect it to happen here as well. But it's essentially, are you painting these companies into a corner where there's really no viable option?
By the way, these are headlines that haven't even gone in. We're not into the presidential political cycle here, really, where this is where you usually hear the beatdown. So it's a little concerning, but I think we're going to get back to a place where in markets that are fearful of recession and macro, healthcare and some of the predictability on at least these companies that have pipelines that we can model out the next 3 to 5 years is going to make a lot of these companies very attractive.
All right. We got another bullish development for regional banks. The KRE ETF jumping more than 5%, closing above its 50-day moving average for the third day in a row. It is now up 25%. From its intraday lows hit just a month ago. Every one of the 140-plus stocks in the ETF up today. The biggest winners, cloud-based Live Oak Bank shares and First Foundation up almost 11%. Home Street up 10%. Have we seen the worst, Guy?
I think they're more headline risk for sure, but in the absence of news, I mean, this thing's going to grind higher because valuation is going to be compelling for people. And I think they're going to say, you know, I don't want to get ahead of something. And with each passing day, I think people become more emboldened. What I found really interesting, and this probably makes a lot of sense, is KRE for sure. But look what it did to the small caps in the form of the IWM, right, which is heavily bank weighted. So I think people are looking at small caps and saying maybe the worst is over in terms of the economy. But I think it's somewhat misguided because so much of this is on the back of banks, which is just a catch-up trade on valuation, in my opinion.
Well, one of the things that I think means you have more room for this trade to go higher, in addition to the things you just said, Guy, which are dead on, is that Fed fund futures are back above where they were pre-SVB. There's some sense here that the Fed now has, that the world is gone back. We know that headlines are coming. I agree with that also. I mean, that, there's no question more banks are going down. We've just also learned in the last 3 months that how quickly you can actually run from a bank. But the valuations went to recession, credit recession levels at 0.9 times price to tangible book. So there is value when you own an ETF, you have diversification, and it was probably the right sequencing even just in terms of time. There's no reason to buy that trade right away, but I think they do go higher.
I mean, once upon a time, like a month ago, the concern was increased capital requirements. We just had that article in the Wall Street Journal saying, 20% higher capital requirements for banks that are even smaller than the current requirements, so $100 billion in assets or more, and that didn't really dent this rally today. So can we say, you know what? Not bad. Maybe things are okay now.
Well, I mean, we're sort of painting all of them with the same brush when we make a comment like that. I mean, there are some winners and losers. There are some regional bank participants that actually have seen net deposit inflows that don't have a lot of duration, that don't really have a whole lot to worry about on their balance sheets, have mostly insured deposits. And, you know, we're at, the same level for KRE that we were close to 10 years ago. It's a bump off the bottom, but we're still very close to it, let's be honest. So, I think it would be okay to dip your toe in here, but I think that the concerns that we have about real estate and commercial real estate in particular, I still think that there's probably going to be more shoes to drop there.
Yeah, Mike, you mentioned a good point about commercial real estate. Now, I can't say whether or not the worst is behind us. What I think we can safely say is that these stocks were priced as if the worst scenario was already priced in. And that's where the real trading opportunity comes in. But to Mike's point, I still do think there is some contagion risk within that commercial real estate space. And that might likely be the next shoe to drop.
Coming up, Coinbase Crush shares tumbling for a second straight day as it becomes the latest SEC target. What regulators are saying and how the options pits are handling it next. Plus, investors cheersing. That's terrible. Over Molson Coors today as Budweiser's pain seems to be turning into the TAP's gains. What analysts expect out of this one when Fast Money returns.
When it comes to your finances, you think you've done it all. Saving, researching, investing. Now you can take those investments to the next level with Yahoo Finance, our sponsor today. I have an investment account with Schwab and a 401k with Fidelity, and I use Yahoo Finance to consolidate them so it's incredibly easy to manage. They've been helping great investors like you for over 25 years. So whether you're a seasoned investor or just looking to level up, Yahoo Finance can simplify things, putting all your tools and data in one spot. Yahoo Finance takes a 360-degree look at the financial news cycle, from breaking news, original editorial perspectives, analyst ratings, independent research, and customizable charts. They've got you covered. You can see all of your 401k and other investments by securely linking your brokerage accounts. Yahoo Finance gives you insights and helps you see your wealth in its entirety. That big picture perspective helps smart investors become even better. For comprehensive financial news and analysis, visit the brand behind every great investor. YahooFinance.com, the number one financial destination. YahooFinance.com. That's YahooFinance.com.
Welcome back to Fast Money. Coinbase shares plunging today after the SEC sued the crypto exchange, alleging its prime brokerage exchange and staking program, violate existing securities laws. Coinbase fell 9% in yesterday's session after the SEC lodged similar complaints about Binance. Coin's response is basically, there are no rules here. So what do you expect us to do, Guy? These things seem untouchable with this SEC campaign.
And they continue to be untouchable for sure. Now, this stock will probably bounce at some point over the next couple of weeks, and you can get excited the worst is over. I don't think the worst is over. And Jim Chanos has been talking about this for years, seemingly. I think he's been short the stock. If I'm wrong, I stand corrected. But rightly so if he is. And there's more downside in these names. Now, what it means for Bitcoin, I'm not so sure. But I'll tell you, Bitcoin hasn't traded particularly well over the last couple of weeks either.
Yeah. Tim, what do you think?
Well, there's still not really any clear legal path for these companies to register these things as securities.
Right.
And that's part of the issue here. I do think also Coinbase has had this hanging over them for some time. So, once we understand more about the extent of the penalties, it actually may be some sense of, okay, unless there's a defiance and a sense of, no, we're not going down this road, I wouldn't be messing with the SEC here. I also think that, as we've said many times, this industry should want more regulation. It should embrace it. And I think that's, you know, something that we are starting to get a little bit more behind. But the pathway to making this clear cut as to how they should treat the underlying is not clearer today than it was yesterday.
Yeah, I mean, what is shocking is that the SEC is basically saying you've been operating like this since, what, 2019 or something. I mean, it's been years that they've been operating like this, and nothing has been done until today. And so in the meantime, all these people, if it were truly dangerous for all these years, they let investors go ahead and do that. And if it's not, then they've just been punishing this company that's been operating like that for years for no reason.
Yeah, exactly. You want more regulation. You don't want more litigation, right? The path to how you're supposed to operate is supposed to be extremely clear. And it's still unclear. Is it SEC? Is it CFTC? Is it futures contracts? Are they, you know, are they SEC regulated tokens or whatnot? I mean, my mind spins trying to wrap my head around what the legal precedent is for them to even operate. Mm-hmm. What I will say is I'm much more comfortable with a Coinbase than I am Binance. And let's parse into this. Essentially, the Binance situation is saying that funds are being misappropriated or being
commingled.
That's a completely separate issue. And I don't think Coinbase should be trading off in tandem to that. This is, as Guy and Tim both said, this has kind of been an overhang for the stock for some time. And I think that's somewhat priced in. But I just do want to delineate those two separate things between Binance and Coinbase.
Well, what's surprising to me was that Hood was higher today in spite of this. Or do you think maybe Hood benefits because Coinbase is in trouble? I don't know. I couldn't figure out how to read
Dan
it.
Dan talked about Robinhood a couple of months ago. My time's escaping me. But, you know, in terms of their balance sheet, they're actually not in bad shape. So this stock, we talked about it a month or so ago. Trading the stock from the long side seemingly made sense. And I do think to a certain extent they're probably a beneficiary from all of this.
Well, options traders flooding into Coinbase today. So, Mike, what were they betting?
Yeah, so this was actually the busiest financial stock option. It was the sixth busiest single stock option overall. And we did see puts significantly outpacing calls. Now, what was interesting here was that the two busiest contracts were the 50-strike puts and the 40-strike puts, both of those expiring at the end of this week. But where I saw some of the bigger prints, people were actually selling those 50-strike puts and then buying the 40s on a ratio, but they were net collecting premium. I think the idea here is that they think, okay, this has been a known overhang. Now it's out there. Maybe the stock will stabilize, you know, in this $50 to $48 range between now and the end of the week. But to Guy's point, in the longer run, we did see some downside puts trading, but much further out in time. So it seems like people are trying to collect some premium, figuring the news is out, but they do see potential overhang in the months ahead.
Right. For more options action, tune into the full show. That is Friday, 5:30 p.m. Eastern Time. There is a lot more Fast Money to come. Here's what's coming up next.
Raise a glass to Gaines. Shares of Molson Coors bubbling higher as controversy brews at one of its chief rivals. How the Budweiser backlash is fueling the move. Next. Plus, a cautious call. One analyst dialing into AT&T, but it's far from a full bar backing. The cellular stance ahead. You're watching Fast Money, live from the NASDAQ market site in Times Square. We're back right after this.
One in eight. That's how many people have worked at a McDonald's. We'll serve millions the best Big Mac and best birthday party they've ever had. Who haven't just seen kids graduate from a Happy Meal, but have gotten help graduating themselves. Because they know the skills learned here.
Bienvenidos. Welcome to English Under the Arches.
Can help you grow from here or keep growing here.
Hi, welcome to
One in eight, start at McDonald's. And where you start stays with you.
Welcome back to Fast Money. Shares in Molson Coors, a producer of Miller and Coors Light, popping higher today after an upgrade at Bank of America. The firm saying the beer maker is the biggest beneficiary of the Bud Light boycott and that the boost in sales will likely last through the July 4th holiday. Stock is up more than 26% since the controversy took hold, and it's lasting much longer than what many analysts had expected. Tim, just the other day, your final trade was
Budweiser.
Yeah.
The Brazilian beer company. That really bothers people, so I have to do that. I think some of this is overdone. I think, first of all, there are trends in beer, and there's been consolidation that have been troubling for the entire industry. And there have been those that have held up better. And you look at a Constellation and you know what they've been able to do with their Modelo brand and whatnot. I think this is an opportunity for Budweiser longer term. And I, you know, honestly, I'm an investor, and you know, this is what I care about. And I think it's absurd, by the way, to not be able to invest in a company based upon, again, the reasons people may or may not be boycotting. Because, you know, these are the kinds of things you hear from people. And it tells me opportunity. I think it's crazy.
Yeah. The thing about boycotts is that they're really unpredictable. I mean, look at the pickle that Target found itself in.
Yeah. Pickle again.
Yeah. Sorry. That came up in yesterday's show. Yeah,
We asked the question, maybe you know.
Like, in a difficult
where's
spot.
Where's the phrase come
which
from?
Apparently
in a pickle. It's got to be Shakespeare. Everything is Shakespeare. No, I mean, if you don't know, just say, let's go with the Shakespeare. By the way, pickles are very good for your constitution.
They're also delicious.
The more you know.
That's a separate issue.
Yeah, completely.
For now, the issue is sort of like, you know, as an investor, you can think about models, you can think about inventory, you can think about margins, et cetera, but when it comes to these boycotts, you just don't know how to price these things in.
You also know that people have short memories, and everybody loves a comeback story, and I think Budweiser will figure this out. And Tim probably talked on his final trade about valuation, and it less now than 15 times forward. Budweiser's cheap. Now, it's interesting about TAP. They reported on May 3rd, which was a great quarter. Stock sold off pretty significantly after that. This move got right back to those levels. So TAP is one thing. It's fine. I think Budweiser is the play here.
Yeah, I mean, I think this is definitely a short-term phenomenon, right? This boycott situation, you said no visibility, and I guess that gives investors a bit of pause. But at the same time, there's probably not a lot of staying power to this whole situation. And then if you just kind of start to look at the financials of the companies, you got TAP and Bud that both trade around that 15, 15 and a half times, but the gross margins are literally 20% different, right? So there's no way over the long run I'm rotating out of Bud into TAP knowing that I'm going to pick up 20 points of gross margin if I stay in the Bud trade.
I do drink Coors Light, by the way, just to be clear. Full disclosure. We have to give disclosures on air, right? I mean, I enjoy, and I got to make sure those mountains are nice and blue.
I drink peach Snapple.
Let's get them nice and blue.
What do you drink? I mean, now that we're having this conversation.
What do I drink? I drink water.
Yeah. Bonald, anything?
Such a good girl.
Modelo, so funny.
Okay.
Michael, your thoughts, and what do you drink, too?
Well, I don't drink Coors Light or Miller Light or Bud Light, actually. We drink more wine out here in Northern California than light beer. But, you know, with respect to the boycott, I don't know. I mean, if somebody was buying a product and suddenly switches to another one, who's to say it's going to switch back? I mean, I'm not talking about simply forgetting the reason that you made that shift. Once it's done, it may very well be done. I don't know necessarily that you're going to see a big return back to Bud Light if people decide that they like, as Tim does, Coors Light.
Coming up, spilling the tea. What? I think that's so funny. He does drink Coors Light. We've seen him drink Coors Light.
Of course, we've been out.
Boat water, by the way. It's hydrated.
Spilling, that's what you like to think. Spilling the tea. Shares of AT&T getting a boost after an upgrade from one analyst, but it is more of a flip phone type of call. Craig Moffett of SVB Moffett Nathanson dials in next with what he sees for the space. That interview when Fast Money returns.
Get your trades to go with the Fast Money podcast. Catch us anytime, anywhere. Follow today on your favorite podcasting app. We're back right after this.
Welcome back to Fast Money. Stocks closing in the green after a volatile day. The Dow barely managing to eke out a gain. The S&P up nearly a quarter of a percent, hovering near a 19-month high. The Nasdaq up more than 0.3%. Home builders a bright spot in today's market action. PulteGroup and D.R. Horton both closing at all-time highs, while Toll Brothers and Lennar were both at their highest in over a year. This doesn't make
sense. Guys, home builders.
Yeah,
I own them.
It's been crushing it.
Environment where the economy might be headed for a recession.
Supply-demand imbalances have been around in this space for quite some time. They got through the hiccup of rising rates. The market figured it out, and now they're going higher. There will be a day where people are going to start to pull the ripcord, given unemployment may be ticking higher, some of these things. We're just not there yet, and I think these stocks can continue to grind higher.
Yeah, and a lot of the input costs have really come down, Bonin, which is helping margins.
They certainly have. I mean, and that explains a lot of the other moves. I mean, at Toll Brothers, that's kind of the port in the eye of the storm, just because of their pricing and where they're kind of marketing their homes to. And to Mike's point earlier, you got to pick winners and losers. But to Guy's point, I really think it's about supply and demand imbalance. And that's why you're seeing the home builders move this way and that being differentiated from other parts of the real estate environment.
All right. Meantime, we got an upgrade for AT&T. That's our call of the day. SVB Moffitt Nathanson raising the stock from underperform to a market perform. While analysts point out they don't see much upside for the stock, they do say shares have already priced in the tough environment. For more, let's bring in Craig Moffitt, the man behind the call. Craig, great to have you on. I think the last time we had you on, it was something like along the lines of what's wrong with AT&T. You laid out all these reasons why you didn't like the stock at all, and here you are, you're less bearish. And that's simply because it's fairly valued now?
Yeah, look, I'm less bearish because it's less expensive. It was, I think, if I recall, $23 at the time. Now it's 15 and change. And so it's hard to have the same level of bearishness at this valuation.
You do call into question, though, its cash figures, right? It's cash flow figures.
Yeah, look, to be fair, I'm not the only one, but this is a company that significantly lowered its guidance last year for free cash flow, and the proof is in the pudding, right? For all the free cash flow that they said they generated, their net debt actually rose a little bit last year instead of fell without any acquisitions. But leaving aside that issue, I mean, this is a company that is struggling, right? We've got it doing 220 in earnings this year. By 2027, we've got it doing just over two. So this is not a growth business. It's a tough industry, and it's not something I think we said in the note. We're not optimists. You shouldn't mistake this upgrade for suddenly we think there are green shoots and things are getting better. It's simply that the market has appropriately priced in that what you get when you get AT&T.
Craig, first, congrats, because you really have been on the other side of this trade, and it's kind of cool to see, you know, taking two bites of this cherry. I'm long AT&T and was on the wrong side of the trade on the way down. But the competitive and predatory nature of the industry, throwing in obviously scrambling cable companies too, T-Mobile has crushed everybody. And should we read through that the best days for T-Mobile are over? And I know we're talking about AT&T here, but I look at the entire industry, and yes, the glass is half full at this point. But I continue to think T-Mobile is going to eat their lunch.
Yeah, it's a good point. They absolutely will, I think. The question there is, are expectations for T-Mobile now also at a point where it looks like it's roughly a market performer? I sat on a buy rating on T-Mobile for what was essentially a decade and downgraded them about, I want to say, 4 months ago, because I think they're any less good a company, but because finally expectations had caught up. And again, it's, you know, T-Mobile is the best house in a bad neighborhood, but that's fine if the neighborhood is declining. If the neighborhood catches on fire, even the best house is not going to be a place where you necessarily want to be. And so my enthusiasm for T-Mobile has cooled because expectations have come up, the price has come up, and the neighborhood has gotten even worse.
Since you're less bearish on AT&T, Craig, is the possibility of it cutting its dividend in the rearview mirror, or is that still a possibility given your doubts about free cash flow?
Always a possibility, unfortunately. I don't think it's an imminent possibility. We started saying we thought they'd cut the dividend I want to say 5 years ago or so, and it finally culminated in the dividend cut that they took as they were spinning off the Warner Media business. I think now it's probably safe for the time being, but ultimately, if you're a business that's got as much debt as AT&T does and you're not growing, and they're not, then ultimately that where that takes you, particularly in a rising rate environment like we're in, and they have to refinance their debt, is it takes you eventually to having to cut the dividend. And to be clear, the pressure on the dividend at AT&T, and this is true for not just AT&T, but also Verizon even, is not that they don't generate enough cash to pay the dividend. It's that they don't generate enough cash to meaningfully delever, and their leverage ratios are already higher than what would be warranted for their credit ratings. So ultimately, the pressure point is something's got to give, and usually that is that they have to reduce the dividend in order to delever faster.
Craig, always great to have you on. Thank you so much.
My pleasure, Melissa. Good to see you.
What are your thoughts about AT&T?
Well, I mean, we've talked about it for a while. There's been no real compelling reason. Valuation and the dividend, both those things haven't really worked all that well. I mean, Craig's been on it for quite some time. So for him to make this move is significant, but he still has a $17 price target. T-Mobile, on the other hand, I think he's got a $178 price target, which is about a 30% move from here. That's the place to be. But the existential risk to all these people is Amazon. And we talked about it last week and probably there where there's smoke, there's fire.
Mike, do the options indicate any doubts about the dividend?
They do, actually. You know, I was long AT&T after that most recent reported quarter, and we saw disappointing free cash flow numbers. I actually unwound it at that time. I added a little bit today. Right now, the options market is implying a forward dividend of about 18 cents. So that's less than the current one. There's a couple different ways to think about that. You can think about it as a probability of a large cut, or, you know, a combination of a good size probability of a moderate cut in the dividend. I think they would have to cut it fairly meaningfully. We are in a higher cost of capital environment. And if you don't have a growing business, you don't want to see your debt levels growing in this environment either. That's untenable, as we were just hearing. So I think a dividend cut is probably quite likely within the next 18 to 24 months.
I think a dividend cut would be devastating for the stock. They are not in a position to cut the dividend. That's what people are hanging around for. I realize it's kind of a cartoonish looking dividend at this point, and it kind of should be based upon the capital erosion. So I can tell you I would find that to be reason to run.
Up next, a new buzzkill for Boeing, the latest nightmare for the Dreamliner, plus a big lift for Lyft. What's behind today's surge? And throughout June, CNBC is celebrating Pride Month. Here's the chairman and CEO of Dow Chemical.
Supporting Pride is one way that we can show the LGBTQ plus community that we all accept and respect each other for our differences, whatever those differences may happen to be. Supporting Pride gives hope and reassurance that each of us can be our best because we are accepted as who we are, our true and whole selves. It really comes down to simply treating others how we want to be treated ourselves, with empathy, understanding, and compassion.
Do not miss our own Tim Seymour on CNBC's monthly Pro Talks tomorrow, 1 p.m. Eastern Time, hosted by Christina Partsinevelis. Pro subscribers can join live on the digital side at cnbc.com/ProTalks.
Lots to do. It's going to be exciting. Picture.
They're like answering. You're going to answer questions.
We're going to answer questions. We're going to get in deep. There's a lot to do. It's going to be exciting.
All right.
Tune in.
Meantime, we got a buzzkill on Boeing. Shares dropping after the aerospace giant issued a warning about a new defect on its 787 Dreamliner. The problem will delay the delivery of the planes. The stock ended the day down around a buck and a half. Mike, it just seems like one after the other in terms of reasons to delay.
It is just a constant source of bad news, it seems, coming out of them. It seems every single time we kind of get something put into the background, something else emerges. Obviously, the 787 Dreamliner has had a slew of problems for a couple of years now. And then, of course, we had the big mess with the 737 MAX. It's right now, I think it's probably, as Carter likes to say, a pair of twos. I mean, I don't think that there was a whole lot of good news built into this thing. Because we've sort of come to expect this at this stage.
Yeah. Tim?
Well, the free cash flow, the 787 has been one of the most free cash flow generative planes they make by far. I mean, the wide body's a lot more so than the MAX. And so this is a hit. But I still think I'm just looking at the numbers here. I mean, the free cash flow associated with the 787 is about $600 million today. The expectation is, as they continue to ramp up, that it was going to be $2.5 billion by 2025. I'm looking at a note from Jefferies, by the way. This is a big hit. And I do think this is a company that is all about free cash flow in the future, because I think, you know, COVID is in the rearview mirror, and we can say that. And for the airline industry, normalcy is good for Boeing.
All right. Lyft, by the way, tapping the tape. The rideshare app wrapping the day up more than 6%. Stock making more than a 27% comeback from May 24th when it hit its all-time low. What a turnaround, Guy.
What a turnaround. But how many times have we seen this before? And listen, I was on the wrong side of Lyft for the longest time, but I finally even said, you know, it's time to pull the ripcord. And every bounce we've seen has been exactly that, a short covering bounce. And my sense is, we're seeing exactly that right now. I don't think anything has fundamentally changed.
Is this in your acronym?
You know it's in my acronym, and
she loves doing that, by the way.
No, it's fine. It's not, and the acronym is LAGS, and it is the L in LAGS, and in fact, it's the part of the LAGS acronym that is lagging. It's actually been destroyed. Everything else there is doing just fine. So it's a long season, as we say, and I plan to win this thing. I didn't play the acronym game to lose.
No, yeah,
nobody does. You know,
nobody does.
It's no Dawn.
Why would you bother playing the acronym game unless your intent was to win?
That wasn't. I just said something mean spirited, by the way.
Yeah, no, I heard what he said. He said it's no Dawn, is what he said. It was a dig. I hear everything.
Well,
since we're quoting all this,
Mr. Calm.
Dan has a pretty. Yeah, Dan, I'm going to try to stay calm here. Dan has a pretty good one. One up, two down, right? And that is the story of this. You know, it's only a few days ago where I saw news essentially saying that they're going to have to reimburse gig economy workers. So I'm also inclined to think that this is a short-term, short-covering bounce, and I'd probably be selling into it.
Yeah, Mike Coe?
Yeah, I don't see this is necessarily the time to get into it. You really want to see more momentum behind it. We're still stuck in a downtrend here, and until I see us meaningfully break out of that, I wouldn't be tempted.
All right, coming up, the Pied Piper of Wall Street, Ryan Cohen. Up next, we'll have an exclusive first look at a brand new documentary I've been working on, Making of the Meme King, ahead of its premiere tonight. You won't want to miss this. Fast Money will be right back. Welcome back to Fast Money. Tonight on CNBC at 10 p.m., we'll be debuting a new documentary looking at the rise of Ryan Cohen, the man who became known as the Meme King. The former Chewy CEO made headlines for going all in on Bed Bath & Beyond, among other stocks, but it was his exit that raised some eyebrows.
This feels like a big fugazi, as the kids say.
It's real.
But yeah, exactly.
We were trying to figure things out in real time. You're looking through it, you're comparing it with past filings, and that's when we realized that there was not really much new information in that amended filing. It was sort of a race to just try and figure this out because we were seeing the stock run. And so we wanted to find some answers. And what we later learned a couple days later in another filing is that Ryan Cohen sold his entire stake, every share.
That's not something small. We're talking over $140 million. That is a non-trivial amount of volume to get sold. I was not paying attention to Bed Bath & Beyond at all until his trades came through. A trade of that size, it's only natural that that sort of raise red flags.
Shares getting crushed right now, down 40%.
Such a gut punch, but what you saw was like all these people were just left with shares that had just crashed.
From Redditors to people close to Ryan Cohen, here are the inside story of the mysterious and sometimes controversial entrepreneur turned activist investor. It's all tonight, 10 p.m. Eastern Time and Pacific. Making of the Meme King right here on CNBC. And, you know, during the whole meme craze, he was the poster child. He was known as Papa Cohen on Reddit.
Well, no one.
The story of the shorts.
And nobody cared about the fundamentals. Nobody cared about. There was some sense of almost, kamikaze investing. I mean, did you speak to him?
No. And that was the interesting thing about this documentary. Usually we choose to do a documentary where you have some sort of access. This is new. He declined to participate. We did talk to many people who were very close to him, including Larry Chang of Volition Capital, who gave him the initial money, the initial seed money to start Chewy. So people who knew him very well, to get sort of how this man ticks and what his motivations may or may not have been.
It's a fascinating time in investing. You know, we've seen a lot of different cycles. The whole meme dynamic is something that is as pronounced as any.
And then the Bed Bath & Beyond, when he sold every single share, was it actually a rug pull? Or was that just Ryan Cohen saying, you know what, I can't enact the change I want because there's not enough time, it's too close to bankruptcy? Or did he know something else? Because he had three directors on the board at the time he sold.
I'm sure you'll address this. How many docs have you done, by the way?
I don't know.
Too many to count.
See, I lost count.
I would know if it was because I haven't done any. With that said, I mean, was it Bed Bath & Beyond that he announced that huge way out of the money call option?
Right, which had already been in place prior to that.
And then he chose, you know, the opportune time to announce it. So there's a lot of things to dissect. I will be watching after the Yankee Pale Sox game this evening.
I mean, me too.
Yes, of course.
I know what you're talking about. But Mike, has there been any sort of is there less interest in these meme stocks in the options pits?
I think there's a little bit less certainly than there was during the peak in the pandemic. But, you know, when you think about it, for years, we always were focused on what the whales were doing. Where's the big money, the real money account flows? Because, of course, as we all know, when it comes to the stock market, in the short term, it's a voting machine. In the long term, it's a weighing machine. We care how people are voting with their dollars. And what we learned during the pandemic was that retail traders en masse, in some cases, are a much bigger impact, especially on some of these, you know, sort of controlled float situations, than the real money accounts can be. So, of course, it's something we all want to pay attention to. I think that we certainly do still see short-term trading going on in the options market. It's not as much, though, as we were seeing in the peak of the pandemic period.
Yeah, let me throw out the disclaimer in big red letters. I am not advocating playing in these stocks. However, if you are going to play in them, I think options likely really is the only way to do it because of the short-term nature, because of the shock nature of these types of trades, and just because of the FOMO and momentum aspect of trading that's really kind of separated from fundamental analysis.
Up next, final trades. Time for the final trade. Let's go around the horn. Mike Coe.
Yeah, mortgage applications, earnings, and a whole bunch of other stuff coming up. Of course, rates, but we own Lennar right here. If you get a pullback, you might want to take a look at it.
Tim?
I still think Boeing, that free cash flow comes back. If you're patient, and granted, as we said, you get a lot of Boeing stepping on its own foot. Let's hope not.
Bonawin.
I think short-term shocks present long-term investing opportunities. I'm going to take a look at Bud.
Okay.
Denver, Miami, tied at one. What are you thinking, Melms? A lot of people didn't have Miami winning any of these games. What are your thoughts?
Denver.
Simple.
She synthesized. She cut right to the chase.
I'm going to watch Jimmy Butler special tonight, too.
Jimmy Butler. I'll be tuning in 10 p.m. Eastern. Yeah. ExxonMobil system.
All right. Yes. Making of the Meme King. 10 p.m. Eastern time right here on CNBC. Thank you for watching Fast Money. Mad Money with Jim Cramer starts right now.
All opinions expressed by the Fast Money participants are solely their opinions and do not reflect the opinions of CNBC, NBC Universal, their parent company or affiliates, and may have been previously disseminated by them on television, radio, internet, or another medium. You should not treat any opinion expressed on this podcast as a specific inducement to make a particular investment or follow a particular strategy, but only as an expression of an opinion. Such opinions are based upon information the Fast Money participants consider reliable, but neither CNBC nor its affiliates and or subsidiaries warrant its completeness or accuracy, and it should not be relied upon as such. To view the full Fast Money disclaimer, please visit cnbc.com/fastmoneydisclaimer.
At Capella University, you'll get support from people who care about your success. From before you enroll to after you graduate, pursue your goals knowing help is available when you need it. Imagine your future differently at capella.edu.